from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul
to keep. Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And my special guest tonight is Christine Breeze of the University of Metaphysical Sciences. Hi, Christine.
Hello. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay after that big energy jolt we had this week. How are you doing?
All right. We sure did have an energy jolt this week, didn't we?
Oh, my
gosh.
Seems
like it. So you felt it too, huh?
Oh, man. You know what? First of all, it kept me up. And so I was up like at 1:55 in the morning.
Yeah, that happened to me too.
Yeah, just too much energy. So I was running around doing things, and I thought, oh, man. You know, and then I went out into the town, which was a big mistake because, you know, I live in the town of Woo Woo here. And people were going
Where's
through there.
Where's that exactly?
Sedona.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we had people actually that were going through. Yeah, it was strange. You know, people were going through their stuff, and everybody was irritated, and I was a little irritated at everybody else being irritated, so I left.
Well, you know, my webmaster said something about the planet Pluto going direct or something like that. I don't know much about astrology or anything, but we had all kinds of stuff come up where in the social circle of the office, where survival issues, things that needed to be dealt with came up. Everybody had to talk their feelings out. And we definitely had, like, some things come up for clearing, but it, more so than ever, probably. And he said that the planet Pluto had something to do with that because it had gone direct about a week ago, actually, exactly a week and a half ago, I think.
Yeah, and that would make a lot of sense. My friends that do astrology tell me that is the big shift for everybody. And
Pluto
and I went through the same. Yeah, Pluto's the big one for that. I went through the same things in my personal life and in my business life too.
Right.
And it was like, whoa! I think I'm just going to go home and sit by myself.
You know? Oh, our business is going through all of this too with the survival issue and everything. The Department of Education is trying to pass a religious discrimination law that's against the Constitution, and we have to, pretty much this is what came up in our office this week, is that everybody is having to defend the right for religious, the freedom to teach our religion, metaphysics. Well, here, let me tell you what the words are. In the law that's on Arnold Schwarzenegger's desk right now, and all it needs is his signature to pass into law now, and there's just a few little words in there that give employees of the Department of Education the opportunity to practice religious discrimination, and that is only well-recognized religions are going to be allowed to teach in the state of California. And so who decides what a well-recognized religion is? You know, a Department of Education employee? So we're having to get petitions, and we're emailing all our students and our email list and trying to get all the other schools who have lesser-known religions to get their students in on it, too, to email Arnold Schwarzenegger at the governor's office and say, hey, you know, this is an unconstitutional law that you're about to pass into being, so you might want to think twice about going down in history for passing an unconstitutional, you know, education law into being. Because the employees at the Department of Education in California have been trying to put schools like ours out of business for years now. And we've had
Because you're teaching the truth.
Yeah. Well, one employee specifically said to us, only Christian schools have the right to teach religion, in my opinion, and all these Buddhist, Zen, Sufi, and metaphysical schools have to go. And I was like,
my God.
Can I get that on tape? Because, you know, and ever since that time, we've been having a hard time keeping our registration, and some other schools have been going through this, too, and we've literally had to take them to court And, you know, we're in litigation right now with the Department of Education for trying to block our renewal process. Unfortunately, they haven't been able to yet, but now with these new laws that are going to pass, there's a couple of other little phrases in there that'll totally make it easy for them to put schools like ours out of business in California based on these religious discrimination clauses that they're putting in there. So Pluto is not only a personal thing, it's going for the business as well.
Well, yeah, it's shaking up everything in creation. That's what it's supposed to do. And
right.
Most of us were born under the sign of Pluto. You know, we're the generations that, and there's like three, I forget how far it goes, five generations? Well, I don't know. But anyway, you astrologers out there know it's more than just one generation, I think. And because of that, we are the movers and shakers. We are the
right.
ones who come the doors down, and we're the ones who grab the people and you know, hold them up to the light and say, now, say
right.
that again. So, yeah.
Well,
so, I mean,
sometimes we're called on to fight the good fight. It would be, I mean, I opened to the school of University of Metaphysical Sciences to teach people how to meditate. That's all I ever wanted to do. But I've had to become a paralegal, and I've had to, you know, fight for our religious freedom, and I've had to deal with all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, the medical establishment tried to come after us for saying you can heal yourself by, you know, changing your attitudes and thoughts, and, you know, certain religious people came after us, you know, saying that we're evil and all that stuff. And let's just put it this way, I've had to jump through a lot of hoops to keep this school on the planet, because there's definitely some dark energies that don't want this kind of light and transformational energy to happen.
Well, yeah, you could ask Don and Doug about that. They've had them coming after their radio station since its inception. Because, they've had to get bigger and better and meaner equipment, you know, throughout the years, because people have tried to shut them down left and right.
Why? Because they broadcast programs like this?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly why.
Mm.
And, you know, anything where you're trying to get the truth out, then that kind of stuff happens. So what we have to do is just decide that they don't exist, the bad guys, and just move on past, you know, and not let these little things bother us. And, I've had plenty of that in my business and in my personal life, too, so I know what you're talking about. And it's just been, the last couple of years is kind of like the dying gasp of the bad guys, you know.
Well, the old paradigm fights change, and paradigms are built to fight change, and that's a natural law. A scientific law, because if a paradigm doesn't fight change, then paradigm could be considered a pattern, and basically what people like you and I are dealing with is bringing in a new paradigm, a new pattern in this reality. And paradigms are designed to fight change because they're supposed to stay a pattern. If patterns set up and then don't have any built-in mechanism to fight change, then we could actually never have a pattern or a paradigm, because as soon as it sets up, it would fall apart, another one would set up and fall apart, so there would be no order, it would be complete chaos in the universe. And so, in a way, the old paradigm is doing what it was built to do, and that is to fight change until a new paradigm gets stronger and does make the old pattern disintegrate and the new pattern take over.
Interesting.
It's kind of a shame that old paradigms die hard, but
Well, as one of my wonderful listeners emailed me today and said, you know, I don't care what they do as long as they keep their hands out of my wallet. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's their plan, is to have their hands in your wallet all the way down to your toes.
Or they're trying to make sure that you don't have much in your wallet to begin with.
Yeah.
It's before it goes in your wallet that they have their hands on it.
Oh, Lord. I know, it's been really interesting watching all these changes. And I, of course, you know, feeling the energy so intensely and doing things in a town where the energy's intensified anyway, and most of the people in this town that came here for spiritual reasons, they're very sensitive to things, and they haven't done their homework, a lot of them.
Right.
And so they've been just whipped around like crazy.
Right.
And you know, they're pointing fingers everywhere. Everybody's evil. Everything's bad. Everybody's after them. You know, it's one of those things. It's like they just, like, fell into fear this last week of such intensity. And they're pointing at everybody but themselves. And I'm going, okay, I can see there's things on me I have to work on, so I'm just going to go
right.
home. You know?
Right.
I'll go work on me. How about that?
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, it's a challenge to always remember that it's all one self and it's all one being, that even the bad guys are part of our own selves.
Exactly.
It's hard to remember that sometimes because, we don't really want to think that stuff is inside of us, but everything that's happening in the world, the war, the hatred, the oppression, the disservices, there's something within each of us that supports that, and that's why it's manifested at the mass level.
Yeah.
If there's enough individuals who change those thoughts and attitudes within ourselves, then eventually the mass level has to reflect
mm-hmm.
what is within the individuals that make up those masses.
You know, that brings to mind that I was listening to radio show this last week. I've been listening to more on BBS this week than I have ever before. Not that it wasn't good before, but this week for some reason, you know, I've been tuning in just at the right time to hear certain things. And I've heard different things this week that really kind of piqued my attention. And one of them was talking about the political arena that we're faced with right now, not just in our little political agenda that's going on, but in
pretty
the entire
hairy, huh?
world. Yeah, and they're talking about, and then I was remembering some conversations I'd heard earlier where people were talking, I'm talking the experts on the political scene and the experts on what's going on behind our government, the secret government, what's going on with the people that own the world and things like that. And what they were saying was basically, look, we're in Nazi America, and we let it happen. And so now the question is, what are you going to do to stop it? Because nobody's going to come and save us. We have to do it ourselves.
Right.
And the whole gist of the thing was, you know, what happened in Nazi Germany would not have happened if the citizens had stood up and said, no, that's not right. That's against humanity, and we're not going to do it. But they didn't. They all rolled over and went, oh, well, they're not really bothering me.
Well, and a lot of them were in fear, too, because if you did protest it, you'd get thrown in with the Jews, too. I mean, a lot of Germans suffered who did protest, and they were just thrown in the concentration camps right with those who they were trying to help.
Right, because there weren't enough of them. If they had started early enough, before it got that bad,
right.
If everybody at the very first sign of it had stood up and said, oh, I don't think so, then it would have been over. And I was hoping that America, recognizing this and learning from it, would have started standing up and saying, oh, no, I don't think so. But instead people are going, oh, well, you know, I have to really worry about, you know, how I'm going to feed my family and, you know, and I'd like to get a new car. And I'm sitting there listening to all this and going, oh, my God, here it comes.
Right.
So now maybe, you know, you and I have kind of a unique perspective, and I know quite a few people that do because we've had near-death experiences.
Right.
And,
well, one thing,
you know,
I wanted to say about the people having to stay, before we go into that, I just wanted to say one thing about people being kept in survival level issues. I need enough money to feed my family. I need to keep the shelter over my head. I need to keep my car going so I can go to work. That's designed on purpose because it keeps people from being able to think about the bigger things in life, or keeps people from being able to take action on things. Like, if you can't take off time from work because every penny you earn goes toward your survival issues, you don't have time to go stand in front of the White House in a protest.
Right.
You don't have time to write letters to your governor or your senator or your congressperson. you don't have time to do anything but just try to make ends meet. And that's been designed on purpose. My dad said that back in the 60s and 70s, even in the, and especially in the 50s, that people could work for 1 week and you would take care of all your needs at minimum wage. People could work for 1 week and that pays all your rent, your food, everything. And then everything else you earned on top of that could be used for all the things you want to do in life, like going to school, sending kids to college, buying a house, buying your car, all this stuff. And the standard of living was actually much higher through the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And then after the 60s, my dad said that he thinks that, you know, the standard of living started going down because they realized that people had way too much time on their hands to do protests and write letters and write books and all this sort of stuff about all the political issues. And in the 80s, there was a noticeable difference in how much money you had to earn in order to make your life work. So by the time the 80s came, it was just barely possible for a father to still support the family. But by pretty much by the 90s, both parents had to work in order to support a family and just take care of basic needs. And that's not having extra money to do anything else, just taking care of needs. And then pretty much by the 2000s, both parents were working and still not making ends meet. So, and it's been getting worse and worse ever since then. And I know a lot of parents who, they work their butts off and they still can't really provide much for their kids and they just have bare living expenses. So,
well, it's like when I went to medical school, I know
that in essence,
there were a lot of
lot
single mothers.
Silences people. I'm sorry,
When I went to medical school, we had that going on, and that wasn't that many years ago. But we had single mothers, and some of them bring their kids to school with them because they were, you know, too little, so they weren't in school yet. And so we sat with kids in the classroom and everything else, which was a real pain in the butt when you're trying to concentrate on something for 8 hours straight.
But, the kids don't exactly sit still well.
No, and you know, and it's hard enough paying attention to some of this stuff. It's so dry and boring. But I can remember this one lady. She was fortunate. She had a husband who worked in the semiconductor industry, and he was doing quite well. And so he paid for her school and, you know, took care of everything. And they had one child. And she was a wonderful lady. You know, I really enjoyed her. But she would always be talking about the vacations that they went on. And, oh, you know, so wonderful. Oh, we went to Hawaii for the two-week vacation in December. And she'd come back, and she'd just not understand why people were treating her so poorly. And I took her aside one day, and I said, let me give you a clue. They hate your guts. And she goes, what did I do? I said, it's not anything that you did, except you talked about the fact that your life is great. And these are people who are struggling over whether they have enough money spare from what school just cost to feed their kids a can of beans.
Right.
And you're
going on vacations.
You're going on vacations and buying whatever you want in Hawaii, and you're coming in and you're talking about all these great places that you got to eat and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I said, these people resent it, and it's really nothing against you. But you got to understand that, I mean, the school went up 46% in tuition in 3 years.
Wow.
Because they took on too big of a place. And so what they did was look at the students and go, oh, well, we'll just get it from them, which left most of them nothing to live on. So it was like, oh, my God, what a nightmare. But this is the same thing that's happening with people that have full careers and people that have been working for 20 or 30 years, and now they got to worry about whether they're even going to have a pension because with the economy going the way it is, they could be kicked out in an instant.
Well, and Social Security is highly unlikely to be there when in 20 years, so they don't even have that to fall back on.
Yeah, I know. I never planned on drawing from that myself.
No, me neither.
so I'm you know, looking at other things to finally fund a retirement thing. But But, you know, who knows? I mean, I never even thought I was going to make it past the year 2000. So
right.
Somehow I did. I kept re-upping.
Why 2K?
You know those little near-death experiences, and you're out there, and you're in the cosmos with the world teacher, or your particular teacher, and they show you what could happen. And you go, no problem. Put me back. I can help.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get back here and go, oh, crap.
What was I thinking? I should have stayed out.
Yeah, it was easy out there. This is a big mess.
Right.
So, yeah, that's how they get you, you know. And it's all easy there. If they ask you for the decision while you're here and you've had a hard time, you probably go, you know, I think I've had enough of this.
Yeah,
but they ask you, you know, when you're there and you're going, oh, it's so wonderful. Oh, yes, I'm home. Oh, it's wonderful. And then you look at the earth like a video game and go, yeah, let me go back in there.
Yeah, it is kind of challenging to be here. Becoming a human is no small task.
Yeah.
And I think that it's kind of unappreciated for what its amazingness is while we're human. While we're human, we see being human as a chore and a task, and it's a drag for the most part because everything moves so slow and things don't manifest quite so easily as they do in spirit. But I think that it takes a pretty hardy type to even take this challenge on. I don't think all souls in the universe think that this is something they could even do.
Because I would agree with that.
Being a human is actually really hard, and
yeah,
it takes many, many lifetimes to master this art of being human. It's one thing to be a human, but to be an awake human is a completely different story. And
oh, yeah,
to be an awake human, knowing who you are even while you're in physical form, knowing that your eternal consciousness that never really dies, even while you have a body that has an expiration date, that's a true art form, being able to be awake through all that and not be discouraged or in fear or not being daunted by the tasks of this lifetime, and not to end up having a angry at God complex too. I mean, that seems to happen to all of us on the path sooner or later, where suddenly there's this anger at spirit, like, why did you even put me here, and why am I even doing this? What's the use of it all?
Yeah, I think that's something that we all go through at some point, and no matter how many near-death experiences we've had, and you and I have talked about that before. I've had 6, and you just had a recent one. Are you willing to talk about that?
Well, yeah. I was in a Jeep that flipped it twice. And it's a miracle that I'm still alive. I was in the hospital for 5 days with a punctured lung, 6 broken ribs, and a huge amount of bruises and dislocations of things. I was in the back seat, and I was fortunately thrown from the vehicle as it flipped. And the driver of the vehicle died. He was killed by the vehicle rolling over him. And the passenger had 3 spinal fractures. And fortunately, he's healing. But it's been a real slow route for both of us to get back. And there's been a lot of grief for the person who died, who was just a really sweet person and a very skilled driver. It wasn't because of him that the car flipped, that the Jeep flipped. It was a vehicle malfunction. The accelerator stuck on, and it was a 350, one of those 350 engines, or like big horsepower. I don't know cars and stuff that well, but it was like a huge engine for this little Jeep. And the transmission wouldn't disengage, and the throttle wouldn't let go, and we ended up going from 0 to 50 in a matter of seconds.
Wow.
And he did everything he could to brake and clutch and disengage the transmission, and there was just nothing he could do.
Yeah.
But what happened to me was that I was unconscious for 3 days, and during that time, I feel like what happened for me was that I was communing with spirit and with the angels. And this had happened to me once before in my life, about 16 years ago, where I was in a coma for 3 days, and I had huge, vast amounts of experiences on the other side before I came back. And this was pretty much that same kind of thing. And when I came back and woke up in the hospital on the fourth day and realized I was back in my body, my first thought was being really grateful to have been allowed to come back and continue my work. And my second thought was all the people in my life who are really, really valuable to me, even people who have played minute roles in my life, but they still, you know, are special to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just suddenly I found myself hugging each one of them in my energy and just feeling this deeper connection that transcends space and time, mm-hmm. and even the human condition. And suddenly everything just became really precious. The fact that this lifetime is the phenomena, having a lifetime is a phenomena. And to be alive here on the earth in physical form is such a gift. It's not an accident. It's not a task. It's not a chore. It's a true gift and a privilege and honor to even be here. And then yet even more privilege and honor to be able to do the work of the divine, to do the work of God here.
Yeah, and that's one thing a lot of people forget. They talk about, you know, coming back and I joke about going, oh, crap, you know, but the real reason that we came back is to help.
Right.
You know, we came back to make this place something better, to further the vision of the Almighty One that created this. And, you know, and it really is a privilege to be back, and yet we have that longing for being on the other side, because every time we're there, it's like, oh, man. You know, you're out there in unconditional love, and then you come back here and go, oh, you're starving for unconditional love.
Right.
You know?
Well, I feel like it's more than just furthering the vision of some almighty being. I believe we are that almighty being, and we're all the figments in the imagination of that being who mm-hmm. are having experiences within this thought that's passing through the mind of God that's called Earth and humanity. And in a way, I don't know if it's us as beings, as eternal beings, that's evolving, but rather that it's the species that's evolving in order to hold our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I and everyone else, we're already whole, we're already perfect, we're already God's self. There's
exactly.
nothing to fix, or there's nothing to evolve if you're already God's self. However, if you're trying to create a vehicle that can hold God's self, like the human being, or animals, or plants, or anything, that's what's actually being evolved, not necessarily our consciousness. Because if you really get into what consciousness is, it's already perfect just the way it is. It observes, it has an energy. There's nothing to fix about consciousness. However,
right, all we're doing is opening up more to what it is.
Right. And that's because the human vehicle has to open up to being able to hold this vast consciousness that we really are. And that's why it feels so limiting when we come back to the physical reality, because we know what it is to be this expansive, very everlasting, immortal consciousness. And yet when you come back to the physical form, that experience is so limited, and it takes years of evolution in oneself and exploration of what consciousness is to even get the physical form to hold even a minute fraction of the truth of who we really are. And that's why it's so hard to be here.
Well, and then too, in order to hold even that fraction, there's a lot of work that has to be done on the physical. And, you know, as a physician, I've had to tell people many times, you know, if you're striving too hard spiritually and not bringing the physical, mental, emotional along with it, then there's going to be a crash, you know,
right,
at some point, because the physical body has to be tuned, you know, and it has to be tuned to hold that higher frequency as we open up more to the all that we really are.
Otherwise, you can burn it out if
yeah.
the physical form isn't equipped to hold it.
Well, yeah, exactly, and I think that's where a lot of the precautions and all of the different holy books have come from, you know, don't eat this, don't do that, you know, and it's all to keep your vibratory level higher and higher so that you can sustain as you're studying and as you're opening, because
right.
otherwise, you know, the body just quits because it can't hold that vibration.
Yeah, it's true, and I think that sometimes people who become ill, it's because there's old resentments that still aren't cleared, and you can do all this spiritual learning and all this spiritual work, but unless you can apply that to all areas of your life, not just some areas, those areas that are still untouched by the spiritual tools that you have, they can come back up and bite you in the butt by making you ill.
Oh, yeah. Yep, they will definitely do that, and I've seen plenty of that in my practice.
Right.
And usually I'll ask people, what have you been doing spiritually lately?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're striving so hard, and they're fasting, and they're praying, and they're doing all this stuff, but they haven't taken care of the other parts. and you kind of go, well, you know, there's this plan, and the way that it was planned for us to be here is that we have to pay attention to all of these parts of us.
Right.
And bring them all up. It's kind of like when you look at your life, and I had this revelation, I'm sure many people have too. I looked at my life and I thought, what have I studied and learned in this life?
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I realized that I was extremely well-rounded on pretty much everything except a couple little things that can make a huge difference in your life, like money. And I realized I had not been raised by people that understood it, because
uh-huh.
you know, when I was growing up, they did work a week and took care of all the bills and everything, so they didn't understand that there's no money left to put in the savings account,
mm-hmm.
Because they didn't have that experience, you know. And as I started studying with a couple people, you know, wealth gurus and stuff, to find out, you know, what is it about this? And I've still got a lot to learn, I guess, But I looked at those parts of my life and I went, well, why would I beat myself up about that when I didn't have any teachers of that?
Mm-hmm.
Instead, now that I've realized that that's an area that's deficient, I need to go find the teachers of that and start to learn how this all works, how it applies in the world and everything else. And so when you start looking at those areas of your life, I mean, there are people who have felt like they're victims their entire lives. Mm-hmm. Or that they're really angry all the time. It's like, well, if you know you have that deficiency, why don't you go fix it?
Right.
You know, right. Go do whatever it's going to take to learn why you have that, what the lessons are. And, I mean, we all have lessons always. You know, there's always something else to learn. So,
well, I don't think money is actually real.
No, it's not.
It's
complete illusion.
It's just ones and zeros
so
in cyberspace, actually. I mean, if everyone
yeah, exactly.
went to go cash in their money at the bank,
uh-huh.
we probably find that there's only probably maybe 1/1,000th of the amount of money on the planet that actually exists, that is
oh, right.
said to exist in the computers.
mm-hmm.
So
right, because they just buy paper and print it up.
Yeah, so... nothing is actually really money unless it's backed by gold. And very small amount of money in the world, a small amount of the ones and zeros can be supported by gold.
Exactly.
So money, in fact, isn't real.
I guess.
So I look at it as energy rather than something to get. I look
yeah.
at it as energy for whatever you want to change. Basically, for me, I look at money as the amount of energy I'm given to change the world. At UMS, we take in a certain amount of money. I mean, we're not like a rich school. We're not like a super megatropolis kind of super school or anything. I mean, we don't make the kind of money that University of Phoenix probably makes. But whatever we do make, we put it toward somehow furthering the awakening of humanity, be it putting things in the prisons for free. I pay an entire night team to do a charitable thing to make sure that our website is available for people in third world countries. We're doing translations. We're into languages that we're never going to make any money on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to me, I don't feel like actually even getting a savings is important, because the value of money can change in a blink of an eye. Like Depression, a dollar suddenly was worth 3 cents overnight. So the value of money is all relative.
Right.
And in fact, the United States has lost 50, people don't even realize it, but they've lost 50% of their wealth in the past 3 years. Anybody who had $100,000 in the bank for the past 3 years now has $50,000, even though it still says $100,000. But on the spending value of that money in the global economy, it's only worth half of what it was only 3 years ago. So I believe in doing tangible stuff with the money. Don't have it in a savings. Don't hold on to any of it. Keep funneling it into either tangible materials that can actually exist, or do something to change the world. And those are the two things we do with it. We just put a small down payment on a piece of land that we're going to turn into a retreat center. And say the whole, and the other thing we do with the money is we do all these charitable things to make sure that the teachings of our school goes to third world countries for free, goes to prisons for free. People who can't afford it still get to do this. They don't get the degrees and everything, because that costs a lot of time and energy for staff to take care of. But they get the teachings for free. And to me, it's always been about the teachings, not about the money. I could care less about the money, because I would be doing this whether I would be running University of Metaphysical Sciences whether I got money or not. And to be honest with you, I work 14, 16-hour days, and I only get paid, you know, like very little. I only make $1,600 a month, and because I choose to pay myself that little. And yet, because I work twice the amount of hours and I don't really pay myself over 40 hours, even though I work more than 40 hours, really I make $5 an hour at what I do. But when you take into account all the effort and the hours I put in, so it's very true that I'm into this for the commitment to spirit and to bringing these teachings to the world. And the reason I don't pay myself very much, because, you know, I don't need a lot of stuff. You know, I mean, I have a few clothes, a couple pieces of cheap jewelry, and, you know, a guitar. I'm happy, you know, got food. You know, I have my basic needs met. I don't need a lot of fancy stuff in my life. But to me, what's most important is how much I can change the world before I leave it. That's what's going to last. When I die and get on the other side, that's what is going to be most important when I leave. Not whether I had a lot of nice things, but how much did I change the world? And money gives me the power to do that through this school. I've been able to do, you know, I mean, I can't change as much of the world as I would be able to if I had a couple $1 billion, but, you know, with a couple $100,000, I've been able to do a lot to change the world, you know, in my little way.
Thing with the spiritual economy, you know, it's like the whole reason I have this radio show and the whole reason that I went around the country and did the quantum vortex thing for a donation was in order to do exactly that, to change the world and to help people that are really, you know, searching, and people who are distressed, and people who need to who are really asking, you know, how do I open up? How do I become more of who I really am? That's why I do this this thing too. And everybody that I know that's really on the spiritual path, it's the same thing. It's like the guys that have this radio station. If people had a clue as to what those guys have given up in order to do this,
right.
I mean, it's amazing. And everything.
It's not like any of us do it for the money. Because none of us are getting rich at this, except
yeah.
if you count spiritual riches. I mean, maybe we're getting pretty rich that way.
Yeah, well, that could be.
I consider karma kudos definitely spiritual riches. We're getting a lot of karma kudos.
I always see this long chain. I see a long chain of teachers and students. And, mm-hmm. you know, as we each go up one step, we extend the hand down, you know, to the one below us. And we've
right.
got this long chain going into infinity of
right.
groups of people just helping each other. And I keep seeing that. And, you know, that's what sustains me through the,
right.
the stuff that we have to go through in this world.
Right.
And, you know, I know you completely understand the whole near-death thing because you've been there, done that. And, you know, it's like when you're on the other side and you see what's real and you see what's going to happen when you go back to the earth, because they do show you that and ask if you want to do it.
Yes.
So when you see all that stuff and you make the choice to come, you fully realize you're here to help.
Right.
And, you know, you wanted to be a part of this, and so it is a gift that you get to come. And there's plenty of beings out there that would love to do it and are scared to do it.
Right. Because it takes a certain amount of toughness to be here.
Yeah. Exactly. Life is not for
a certain amount of. No, it's not. I think it takes a lot of stamina, actually, to be here. One of the
yeah.
reasons why I don't want to pay myself very much and I keep all the money in the business, since it's a 501c3, is because, you know, I keep all the money in the business structure of the church that runs the school so that it can do more good in the world than it would if it had to come to, for instance, if I was to pay myself a large amount of money and then try to do all this. First, I'd have to pay taxes.
Right.
So, for instance, if I paid myself $100,000, I'd lose $40,000 right off the top.
Hmm.
And then I only have 60.
Yeah.
And then I have, you know, say $60,000 to maybe try to change the world instead of having $100,000 to try to change the world. So that's why I only pay myself, you know, less than 24 grand a year, because, you know, I get to keep that much more money that I don't lose taxes to go in, that are going to go and bomb children in Iraq and hurt people.
Exactly.
I
well,
don't lose
right.
money
well,
to that.
I haven't paid myself yet. I think I gave myself, when I first started, I think I gave myself a couple hundred dollars.
Right.
And I haven't paid myself yet for that very same reason.
Yeah.
Because it's all about, you know, the job that we're here to do on the earth.
It took me 4 years to pay myself. I didn't pay myself for the first 4 years. I only started paying myself a couple of years ago just because I had to eat. You know, $1,600 a month after taxes was, you know,
yeah.
what I had to have.
Yeah, well, I got to pay bills and things like that. Anyway, we're out of time, so
oh.
I wanted to, yeah, it goes fast, doesn't it?
I know.
So I'll have you on again, no worries. I just wanted to let people, you know, hear a little bit about the whole near-death experience.
Yeah, I guess we didn't talk as much about that as we might have, but the things that are important results of near-death experience, that is what we talked about, what we do with
exactly.
our lives.
Exactly, and that was my whole point, because your life changes when you go through a near-death experience.
It really does.
Yeah, I mean, if you're conscious of being on the other side, it will definitely change.
Right. The first time this happened to me 16 years ago, it changed my life and made me start all this spiritual teaching and all writing the books and doing the meditations and teaching the classes. And then now, it's launching my life into yet a deeper version of all of that.
Yeah.
And I have yet to see how it manifests, but every time
I
go...
constantly
the other
surprised
side.
Myself.
Yeah, and every time you go over to the other side and then come back, there's something deeply different.
Absolutely. Hey, Christine, would you give your contact information so people can check out your website?
And sure. You could go to my website at www.umsonline.org, or you can just do a search on the Internet for University of Metaphysical Sciences, and you'll find us. And you can also see my YouTube videos and spiritual talks at youtube.com/metaphysicalsciences.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And we had a couple people that were on the fast chat that were commenting about the energy, too. They were, first they were kept up, and then they were really tired. And you guys, you're not alone. We went through that, too. And I can tell you, most of the town of Sedona that I saw went through it, too. So
it's, I'll tell you, most of the town of Arcata went through it, too. So I think, and all my friends who I've talked to all seem to be going through big stuff. So it seems to be worldwide.
Yeah, and it's something that's necessary and is part of who we're becoming. So, you know, it's a little irritating when it hits that hard, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well, the good thing about a clearing is after it's done, it's cleared.
That's right, it's done. You don't have to wallow in it. You know, go through it, get it done, and be done with it.
Right.
So thank you, Christine, for being on the show tonight, and listeners, if you want to ask Christine any questions, you can go ahead and email her. Why don't you go ahead and give your email address?
ums@umsonline.org. That's U as in university, M as in Mary, S as in Sam, online.org.
Okay.
ums@umsonline.org.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, thank
you.
And
before I sign off here, I am going to be starting a fundraiser, listeners, and I could use all of your help. And anything that you can contribute would be lovely. I would really appreciate it. I will give you the details if you want to drop me an email. And please email me at dr.valerienmd@gmail.com. That's dr.valerienmd. As a naturopathic medical doctor, @gmail.com. And I'd be happy to give you details and tell you what's going on. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. You know I love you guys. And we're going to be lining up some people that have written some books recently for the next several shows. Yeah, as soon as I can get myself organized. So until then. I'm always working on that one. Just seems like life is just going by so fast.
Time has sped up.
Yes, it has. So they have to listen to find out who the guest is going to be half the time. But I did get your stuff up last week, so.
Oh, well, thanks.
They were tuned in for that. So thank you so much again, and take care, Christine, and Godspeed with the healing.
Thank you so much.
Have you on again maybe another month or so, we can do that.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Thank you.
Okay. You're fun to talk
Thanks,
to.
Listeners. Another night has gone by quickly. As usual, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.
Hello? Hello?